Using Gmail? You might want to re-examine the apps you use with it to make your life easier. Google telling Congress in a letter made public on Thursday that it continues to allow outside developers to scan and share Gmail data. Gmail is used by 1.4 billion people around the world. Google defended its privacy policies, telling senators that as long as developers are transparent with users about how they use the data and get consent, they may share the data with third parties.
Facebook doesn't plan to just fight fake news. It's going to war with it. Starting next week, the company has what it describes as a physical and digital war room to monitor misinformation ahead of major elections in both the U.S. and Brazil. Facebook devoting a conference room at its Menlo Park headquarters for the effort, where about 20 people will work to take down fake news that could sway voters.
These whales are suffering. They live here at Zhuhai's Chimelong Ocean Kingdom, where visitors can take selfies with the animals and watch live shows. But critics say this new appetite for animal entertainment in China is driving demand for threatened species. This is one of the country's 60 parks, and that number is growing.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Friday. It's September 21st. It's the last day of summer. And it feels like it here in Chicago. Good morning. Thanks for being with us today on another edition of The Opening Bell and another business day. We've got a great show for you on Friday, as usual. Paul Nolte is in the house today. We're going to be talking about our portfolios and some economic data, maybe even light up a little bit. We're going to be talking about some marijuana stocks as well this morning. A little bit later in the program, Brian Summers will be here from Skift.com. Brian's been predicting what's going to happen with bag fees, and another of his predictions has come true. So we'll talk with Brian in our second segment this morning at about 5:40. But first, let's begin on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk. Futures in the U.S. are pointing toward opening gains a little bit later on this morning on Wall Street. Dow futures are up about 45 points. NASDAQ and S&P futures are a little bit higher as well. In Europe, markets are generally higher, but with the DAX, the FTSE, the CAC, everything above half a percent. The FTSE up about a percent, actually, this morning. And in Asia, markets also generally higher. Lots of green on the screens this morning. The Nikkei is going to end the day up almost a full percent, 195 points. The Hang Seng up about a percent and three quarters. And the Shanghai up almost 2.5%. Oil is trading at $70.77 a barrel, which is down about 35 cents. A couple of stories before we begin this morning. U.S. and Canadian negotiators are working around the clock on a deal to keep Canada in a North American trade bloc ahead of a September 30th deadline. Canadian Minister of Foreign Affairs, Chrystia Freeland, spoke to reporters after a meeting yesterday with her counterpart, the U.S. trade representative. She's returning to Canada for a summit of foreign women ministers today, but she and the U.S. will remain in close contact by phone and email. Canada was left out of the United States and Mexico agreement that was reached earlier in the month to replace the North American Free Trade Agreement, otherwise known as NAFTA. A rising stock market lifted U.S. household wealth to a record $106.9 trillion in the April to June quarter, the culmination of a decade of economic recovery. But it's a gain that is concentrated largely among the most affluent. The Federal Reserve yesterday said that the value of American stocks and mutual fund portfolios rose $800 billion last quarter, while home values increased $600 billion. Total household wealth is now 2.1% higher than in the first quarter, when it was $104.7 trillion. Household net worth reflects the value of assets like homes, bank accounts, and stocks, minus debts like mortgages and credit cards. We begin front and center this morning with Paul Nolte from Kingsview Asset Management in Chicago. Paul's an SVP and Senior Portfolio Manager at Kingsview, and he's with us every Friday morning. Good morning, Paul. Happy Friday.
Good morning.
Good morning. Let's begin with that last story. I think sometimes when you and I talk here on the show, it's probably important to remember that half the country is not in the stock market.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, when all boats rise, it's important, and it seems that's what this is doing to a certain extent. That's what we've been doing.
No, it is. And when you take a look at, you know, again, when you look at the net wealth of investors or people across the United States, there's always the have and have-nots. And certainly those that have and the wealthier are certainly very involved in the markets. They're very involved in real estate. And that is a big contributor to their overall wealth. And you have a large part of the population that does not involve themselves in really cannot because they're living paycheck to paycheck, trying to save and just live.
When we talk about that in inequality from an economic standpoint, going forward, how is it? Because I saw somebody write this week that the country really has two economies right now. That good economy and then the economy you were talking about just now, about people living paycheck to paycheck, and they're vastly different, and eventually they're going to collide with one another.
And that's one of the biggest concerns, I think, that it really bleeds over. You know, it certainly starts in the economic realm, but I think it also will bleed over to the political realm, and that's where we're seeing a lot of those discussions happen on Capitol Hill, and how do we address that? What are the best ways to do it? And some of the ways that people have talked about is minimum wage. There's been some discussions about a certain level of income. You know, we're going to make sure that everybody gets $1,000 a month. So there's discussions about that as well. And what is government's role in trying to make that happen? The problem is, you know, strictly from a mathematical perspective, there's going to be half of the population that's going to be below average. Wherever that average is, half of the population is going to be there. So it's going to be a difficult task to try to bring the outliers closer to the middle. And it's a difficult economic question.
This week, people who were in the stock market, perhaps in the marijuana stock market. That puts a little Bob Marley on here for this conversation. Marijuana stocks did pretty good this week, didn't they, Paul?
Oh, it's been fabulous. Tilray was kind of front and center. And I think if you Google marijuana stocks or Google marijuana, you'll find out a lot about the stock market. It's where Cheech and Chong and Wall Street kind of match, and that would have been unheard of 30 years ago. But it's really more a function of, and this kind of goes back to the discussion we had maybe a year or so ago about Bitcoin. It is now front and center. It's everybody's interested in it. It's going to be the next big thing in the healthcare area and certainly through research and so on. There's only so many players that are in the market that are public. And this is where we have problems in the United States because it's illegal nationally, but it is legal on a state-by-state issue, state-by-state basis. So how can we have a public company in the United States dealing in issues with marijuana?
And even another question, if we're investors in companies that are making its money technically, illegally, I guess, what does that put? How does that put individual investors in jeopardy? Perhaps?
And I don't think it puts them in jeopardy because it's all been cleared by the SEC, so it's gone through the government process. There's one mutual fund that I'm aware of in the United States, ticker symbol MJ, that has a lot of cannabis stocks. Most of them are in Canada. There's I think maybe one here in the United States. But most of them are in Canada. And the stock that everybody's been talking about this week is Tilray, which IPO'd middle of July at about $17 a share, and Wednesday hit $300 a share. So within the course of 2 months, saw ginormous gains. And that's come back. They've lost a little bit more than half their value since Wednesday. So you're going to see some huge swings in those types of stocks. And again, is somewhat reminiscent of what we saw with Bitcoin.
Paul, yesterday the Dow marked its first new intraday high since January. A lot of people are saying now that we could hit even more highs moving forward.
Oh, the momentum is definitely behind the stock market at this point. And what's interesting is, you know, we've talked about this being the worst part of the year for the market. Both August and September are the two poorest months of the year for stocks, and they've sailed right through it. We're up now for the month of September. October is not a bad month. We get to the election in November, and then you get the best 3 months of the year, November, December, and January. So it's very possible we could see additional gains here. And we're seeing that on at least the thought being the U.S. is backing off a little bit on tariffs, and that's really what's lighting a fire underneath the markets. So we've gone from 25% tariffs down to 10%. And the markets are liking that discussion.
I know that you mentioned Apple helping drive yesterday, also Boeing, Caterpillar, a couple of other stocks were in there. Is this something that would might continue for a while? I think I saw somebody yesterday say predict another 2 years of stock market climbing. I don't feel comfortable saying that. I don't know about you.
Well, my nature is generally fairly conservative, and I always find something to worry about. I never worry about the markets going straight up. I always worry about what's lurking around the corner. And valuations for the markets are still toward the high end of historical ranges, whether you're looking at a price to sales, PE basis, etc. And we're seeing an interest rate environment that is not necessarily good for stocks. We've got a Fed that is raising rates, and normally that is poor for stocks as the Fed continues to raise rates. We could see an inverted yield curve late this year, early next, and that's historically been a signal that we should be starting to watch for a recession. We're not seeing a lot of the other signposts of a recession or a market downturn. We're seeing a lot of stocks participate here. So, yeah, I think the momentum is certainly behind the stocks, and we can continue for a while yet. The one thing that would derail the market, I think, is a recession, and right now that's still out in the future sometime.
I saw an analysis by MarketWatch listing the top five Dow contributors since March. Apple, 378 points added to the Dow. Boeing, 316 points. Visa, Home Depot, United Health. What do those stocks tell you about what's happening in the economy or not happening in the economy right now?
Well, when you take a look at it, Apple obviously is the largest stock in the world, or certainly in the United States, at over $1 trillion, and that is the 800-pound gorilla that's driving both the Dow as well as the S&P 500. Remember that the Dow is a different animal than the S&P 500. It's weighted by the highest-priced stocks. So Apple at 200, Boeing at 300 have the biggest impact. Visa is over $100 as well. Those have the biggest impact on the Dow. So when you take a look at that, it's kind of hard to make a generalization. But this week and the last couple of weeks, if you take a look, the industrial stocks have done very well. They've been under a lot of pressure because they've been really in the bullseye of the trade tariff talks. And as that comes off a little bit, people are coming back to those types of names. So it's really been the industrial names that have been driving the markets here.
So all of this said, what should we be doing with our portfolios? Should we be making any moves or doing anything differently?
You know, we've been a little bit more on the technology side. We've certainly been a little bit more on the equity side. International, because of what has been going on in the trade talks, has been doing well. And for our fixed income portfolio, and we still have money in fixed income, we've been a little bit shorter in our maturity schedule. So as long as the markets continue to be on this pace, there's really just kind of sit back and watch. I don't think there's really anything that you need to do yet. As we get toward the end of the year, we'll start taking a look at tax consequences, maybe rebalancing the portfolio after we see what kind of gains we've gotten. But right now, I think outside of just a normal correction that we may see at some point, I think really it's kind of steady as she goes right here.
The calendar seems rather empty today. The only thing that's on there, it says quadruple witching.
So it's a little bit in advance of Halloween. But what that means is that you have options and futures expiration on both stocks and indexes. That all happens today. And normally what that means is you get an awful lot of volume that goes on as investors sell out of those futures and options and roll to the October contracts or December contracts. So again, it happens every the third Friday at the end of each quarter. So this is a normal occurrence. But we're piling on top of that a brand new sector. Instead of the telecom sector, we now have the communication services sector. And so telecom doesn't exist anymore in our world. We all have the internet and so on. The communication services is really a little bit more social media type stock. So Google, Netflix, Disney will comprise that. And where that's going to be important for investors is if they have sector funds. So your sector, your technology sector, your consumer discretionary will look a little bit different after today than they have historically. The S&P 500 isn't going to change, but it's the components with the subsectors that will change. And that will create some trading volume also today.
Very good. Paul, how can people get a hold of you if they want to have a conversation about their own personal portfolio?
They can drop me an email at pnolte@kingsviewam.com, and we can start the conversation there.
Paul is rocking some shorts today. It looks like this might be the last big day for shorts.
I've got to get them in while you can, because they're going to go away for at least 6 months.
Right. Well, Paul, have a great day. Have a great weekend. We'll see you again next week.
Absolutely. Talk then.
Paul Nolte from Kingsview Asset Management in Chicago.
Hi, this is Jim Dahlke with today's Inno Minute on WGN Radio. A rundown of all the Chicago innovation and tech news you need to know, delivered by ChicagoInno.com. Chicago startup Pour My Beer has created a system that allows bars to offer self-serving taps, letting customers pour their own drinks and pay by the ounce. Pour My Beer's technology essentially creates bartenderless bars, and its technology is in around 200 bars across the world. And Cards Against Humanity, the popular Chicago-based card game, announced it's just opened applications for its full-ride scholarship for women in STEM. Students must be a high school senior or an undergraduate college student to apply. That's today's Inno Minute from WGN Radio. Learn more at ChicagoInno.com and sign up for The Beat, our daily email newsletter.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning again, everyone. Welcome back to the program. Thanks for being here with us on our Friday edition of The Opening Bell. As expected, Delta Airlines and American Airlines have now followed suit, raising bag fees by $5 to now $30 a bag. For all of those airlines, Brian Summers, aviation business editor for Skift.com, predicted this would happen. And Brian is with us this morning via Skype from Los Angeles, as he is every Friday here on The Opening Bell. Brian, let's begin with that. Definitely called this.
It has, Steve. You've really put me on the spot the last couple of weeks because you've been asking me what other airlines, if any, would follow JetBlue and United and raise their fee for a first check bag to $30. This took a little bit longer than I expected. I expected American and Delta to follow pretty quickly. That hadn't happened. The dominoes have fallen. It often happens like this in the airline industry, and it looks like $30 for a first check bag is the new normal.
Let me play devil's advocate with you here on this, because I know that you've actually said in our recent conversations that airlines are not supposed to collude to fix these prices or whatever. But it kind of feels like that's what's happening. Explain how this works.
Well, certainly airlines cannot talk to each other. They cannot signal about future pricing. The Justice Department would get involved. But this is just old-fashioned price matching. One airline comes out and says, we want to raise our fees to $30, and the next one does, and the next one does. And this happens in all types of commerce. People take airlines a little bit more seriously, but your competitor is charging a little bit more than you. You think that you can get away with matching their prices and not anger any customers, and so you do it. You can call it a cash grab or you can call it good business, but I don't think anybody, certainly any investor, would be surprised that an airline would be doing this.
Yeah. The other story that a lot of people are talking about here in Chicago is United Airlines announcing a new boarding process. Tell us what's going on here.
This one is kind of funny, Steve. Look, I think every airline every few years has to reinvent the boarding process in some way or another. So this week it's United's turn. They've come up with a bit of a back to the future idea. People who fly, who have flown United, know that they had basically corrals for passengers, groups 1 through 5, and you would line up. People might line up in their corral an hour before the flight. There's really no purpose for that, but folks would see other people in line, and so they'd get up there and they'd stand in line thinking that they had to. So United said, look, this makes no sense. How about we just have people stay seated, and then, like other airlines, we'll call your group, we'll call group 4, and you won't stand until we call group 4. This probably works in theory, but you know how people are at airports and gate areas? Everybody's nervous. People want to stand. People want to crowd the area. And I know that we spend a lot of time on this program maybe blaming airlines, but I do think that part of the problem with the boarding process is human behavior and not an airline issue.
People don't like change at all in a lot of cases. What do you think they're going to say about this? Do you think they'll give this some time to work or no?
You know, this idea is as good as any from United. I don't think it's too groundbreaking. Lots of airlines have a similar boarding process as United is implementing. I think passengers will get used to it relatively quickly. But this idea that you're going to get everybody to sit until their group is called, that's just tough to do. Humans don't like to do that. Everybody wants to get on board as quickly as possible to stow that bag.
Brian, I know the United has made a big deal about having saying that if you have the mobile app, the airline's mobile app, they're going to send push notifications about boarding to that as well. It seems like that should have been in place already, but is that going to be a big deal, a big part of this?
Yeah, it should help a little bit. One of the problems that lots of passengers have at an airport is uncertainty, right? We all want to know what's coming, what time is boarding, when do I need to get to the gate? And people like me, like I'm a professional, I know exactly when boarding is going to start. And I become calmer at an airport because I know what to expect at every step of the way. And I think like simple things like a push notification, hey, your flight is boarding, could make people a little bit calmer. I think lots of people have smartphone devices. I hope almost everyone does. But certainly there's some folks out there that don't or don't know how to use them or don't have push notifications set up. So they'll probably be in the dark a little bit. But it's certainly better than the old school process of just making an announcement and hoping people hear it.
Brian, one of the other stories you've written is about WOW Airlines. I know we've talked about them in the past year, but this WOW used to be the disruptor and the sort of the new guy on the block. You write they're ready for a reinvention now. What are you talking about?
Well, people who have flown WOW Air know that it's a discount airline. Spirit or Frontier in the United States. It's just they basically fly people from the United States to Iceland, either to go on vacation or more likely what you would do is you would stop in Iceland and you would fly on to Europe. So you might fly from Baltimore to Iceland to London. You would get a really amazing deal, maybe $400 or $500 round trip. You would pay extra fees for everything, including baggage and onboard sodas. But I think people have noticed in the past year or two, established airlines like United, American, Delta, and their overseas joint venture partners have become much more aggressive in matching prices from ultra-low-cost carriers. So now somebody in Cleveland or Baltimore is looking on Google Flights, and they see that this airline they've never heard of, WOW Air, is $500. Maybe back in the day they would book it. But then they notice, oh, American or Delta is only $550. So why don't I fly them? That puts an airline like WOW Air in a very tough situation, and that's why they need to reinvent themselves. One interesting thing that WOW Air is doing is they're going to start flying to India, and so it's going to be possible to, say, fly from Baltimore to Iceland onto Delhi, and that is not as a competitive market as the U.S. to Europe, and people could score some pretty impressive deals from the U.S. to India now if they stop in Iceland.
WOW is a private company, and so we don't get a lot of information about their finances. I bet it's hard for you and other reporters to kind of figure out what's going on from a financial point of view, isn't it?
It is. And in fact, I spoke with WOW CEO, I think, 2 weeks ago in London, and he told me something very interesting. He said, I am funding the airport, I'm funding the airline from my back left pocket. you know, there are basically few, if any, airlines where the entrepreneur who started it is still funding the airline 6 years down the line. This guy wants to have an IPO. He might be successful. It might be a risky investment for investors. But who knows? Yeah, and we just don't know much about the finances. We know a little bit. We know the airline is probably losing money. But beyond that, it's unclear.
Brian, good stuff. We'll talk to you again next week.
Thank you so much, Steve.
Brian Summers is aviation business editor for Skift.com. That's at Skift on Twitter. And you can follow Brian, too, at Brian Summers. Make sure you sign up for the weekly Skift Airline Innovation Report as well at skift.com/airline. Brian with us via Skype this morning from Los Angeles.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, futures pointing toward opening gains on Wall Street a little bit later on this morning. Dow futures are up 40 points right now. Let's check in with Orion Samuelson this morning for all the latest agriculture and commodities news. Orion, good morning.
Well, good morning to you, too. And, boy, they're still counting the losses from Hurricane Florence in North Carolina. And the losses were large, but not the biggest in history for hurricanes that hit North Carolina. So it's going to take a while before we get the final count on livestock deaths and on flooding of crops and all that sort of thing. They tried to get as much of the crop harvested as possible before the hurricane struck, but still a lot of crops in the field that were just hammered by 40 inches of rain in North Carolina.
Yeah, it was very scary to see and disappointing as well. 3.4, I think I saw 3.4 million chickens and turkeys, at least 5,500 hogs. How do growers cope with that kind of loss? And I'm guessing they're going to be dealing with this for quite a while.
They will, but probably insurance will play a role in it as far as the crops are concerned because of crop insurance. But livestock losses, it'll probably take a move by Congress to provide some funds for that. And they're sort of, well, gauging this one to the all-time Hurricane Floyd in 1999. That seems to be the benchmark for hurricane damage to livestock farms in North Carolina. That storm killed 21,000 hogs, flooded 55 lagoons, and the state has spent quite a bit of money, $28 million to close 103 hog lagoons located on the floodplain. They're trying to get them out of there. But some hog producers used boats. Others even used helicopters to get into the areas that were totally underwater and do something about getting feed to the hogs that still survived it. So,
here in Illinois, harvest still underway?
Harvest is still underway, moving fairly slowly at this point because I think crops are not fully mature, and so let Mother Nature dry the corn crop down rather than spending money on natural gas to dry it in dryers. And so the rains as well, it moved across the Midwest, actually caused some flooding and certainly put an end to harvest. The other note this morning is the headline coming on the NAFTA talks. Not anywhere near a deal yet because not so much agriculture, but auto tariffs. And so Canada and the United States yesterday in the latest announcement said they're not even close to closing a deal to revamp NAFTA yet. So the other deadline we're concerned about is the 30th of September. If we don't have a farm bill by then, that means we go back to running agricultural programs under the Farm Bill of 1948. Nobody wants to do that.
All right, Orion, what is on the morning show tomorrow?
Tomorrow, we're going to talk about bugs because Jim Fazell, who will be with us tomorrow, said they're really coming out and the rains in the Midwest particularly have brought more mosquitoes than anybody likes. So we're going to talk about what to do as far as protecting yourself from bug bites. And I'm sure that Jim will toss in a thing or two about farmers markets as well.
All right. Orion, have a great weekend.
You too.
All right, Orion Samuelson with us this morning. The morning show tomorrow, 5 to 6. right here on 720 WGN. Now, the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook, not anything on the calendar today. As we mentioned earlier in the broadcast, quadruple witching. We'll be watching the markets for heavy volume today. So far, markets look like they're going to be in positive territory to start the day out. We'll be watching a couple of earnings reports, but nothing major, again, on the calendar for today, Friday, September the 21st.